Evening, Des.
How's it going, Greg? Getting a chance to take advantage of this time zone switch, 10 o'clock.
It's lovely. It's absolutely lovely. It only lasts till the weekend, though.
Yeah,
So
man.
I
I
don't
checked the
know.
schedule. I was like, damn it, it's 11 again next week.
There is the summer changeover. We get about 5 weeks, I think.
Yeah,
But
enjoy
this one
that.
goes real quick. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Now, if Sarah didn't announce this call, I believe she had a bereavement in the family, so there may not be too many people on. So it might be a quieter group than we're used to.
All good.
Bamshi, how you
Hey,
doing,
Rick.
brother?
Good, how are you?
You coming to Costa Rica again this year?
Yes, I'm coming. I'm excited.
You going to the jungle again?
Yes.
Yes, good. Let's see who else shows up. Guys, we got any wins that you want to celebrate before we get started?
Just that Chris has been kicking my butt, but I'm good.
Did I see you hit a new personal best in the squat?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know what he put down for times. I know he had, or for weight. I know he asked what my max was I lifted, but I haven't looked at a one rep max in a while. But I know today I loaded the bar up pretty big. So if it showed today, then that's probably what it was.
Nice.
So, but we're a weekend. We just came off of the four sets of 15, which was killer, to two sets of six. So it felt really good to get to that.
Oh, you did. I got you like the testing week that you do initially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Four sets of 15, 4 seconds eccentric. Yeah, it's tough.
Crazy that the 10 through 15 reps is excruciating, but you keep going when you're done, but you're like, man, this 10 through 15 sucks. On the last 60, the 55 to 60. Lab results are coming in too, and they got me curious.
Oh, they started to come in already. Oh, yeah, you got them done
Yeah.
pretty quick. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
We can go through those early next week if you want to.
That works.
Interesting to see. They do come in quick.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday morning they drew the blood and they started at 5 o'clock this morning and started rolling in.
Oh, do me a favor. I've just sent you another request to allow me access to see them. So you should
Oh,
get an email.
yep, you got it.
Andrew, what's happening?
How are we doing, gentlemen? Dez, Damshi, Mike, Marco, Mats. I'm a couple minutes late because I just jumped off another call with somebody. So,
No problems, brother. So it's going to be a bit of a strange one. So Sarah's obviously, I think Sarah's been dealing with a family bereavement. So she didn't announce the call today. So I think it's going to be a really quiet one. And it leaves a little bit up in the air whether you guys want to see me go through a presentation just for the two guys who have the screen on. So what I was going to go through today was more based around cardiovascular disease and erectile dysfunction, right? So what are the major reasons for erectile dysfunction in men? And we can go through that, absolutely no problem. But we can look at any questions as well that you guys have initially. Even you're in Australia, George. I have no idea what time it is, but welcome.
Thank you.
So if you guys have anything in mind that you guys want to talk about as well, we can do that. And then we can get into a little bit of the presentation as well, whatever suits. So have you guys got any questions that come to mind? Nothing. Des, you got anything?
I'm kind of on a blank. I mean, I'm easy, Aussie. I'm just happy to happy to gain the information you're going to send over.
Okay. There's a couple more coming in. All right, so let's go through a bit of it anyway. Let me get it up first. Okay, so guys, one of the major things that I wanted to touch on today is, and the reason why I bring this up is that I look at a lot of biofeedback forms, and obviously dealing with men more so than I deal with women, I tend to see one of the major things that comes up is erectile dysfunction in some manner. So whether that's the lack of want or pursuit of sex, or whether that's the ability to be able to get and maintain an erection. And I think the major problem that we tend to see in people is that they normally think it's a hormonal problem. So most guys will lean to testosterone and assume that's why they're struggling in that department. I wanted to touch on something that's probably a much more pertinent point. So something that actually leads to erectile dysfunction much more than low testosterone will. The reason why people lean to testosterone is because both of these things tend to be low at the same time. So we're going to touch on cardiovascular disease slightly. I don't want to go into too much detail on it, but we need to know what it is, how it happens, and then what are the best ways for you guys to deal with it. There's going to be a few scare tactics in here. I just want to warn you, because especially for us as men, it's going to be the most likely thing that's going to kill us, right? In terms of percentages, we'll go through in a little bit. So what I wanted to go through is what is it first? We're going to go through the physiology. I don't want to go through it in too much detail. But I think we need to lean away slightly from the traditional kind of, I can't, no, the one thing is I can't teach you moves, but I can teach you how to maintain a better erection, right? So we'll talk about how does coronary calcium accumulate. We'll also look at how we fix or what the major problem with erectile dysfunction is, and how we can deal with what we'll touch on is like what nitric oxide is. So nitric oxide is this magic molecule that is often underestimated in the health sphere. Like we all know it in terms of like wanting to lift weights and get a pump, but where else does it actually lead to issues? We'll touch on that. Now, won't go through this, and it's not actually, it's just a picture of Ben. It's not Ben who made this quote, but you can think of cardiovascular disease in a few different ways. So whether you look at it as coronary artery disease, cerebrovascular, which is more associated around the brain, peripheral arterial disease, which is we tend to see in the extremities. So we'll tend to see that in the lower limbs first. And that's one of the first places that we tend to see the symptoms of like poor circulation and signs that we may be having issues with the cardiovascular system. And I do love this. So Thomas Sydenham, a man is as old as his arteries. And I think that's really apt because all the things that age us, genuinely all of them, will lead directly into our cardiovascular system in some way. So it's really important that we don't ignore it. Now, what affects the cardiovascular system? And this is what I want to touch on because like lipid particles is one portion of this. So LDL, ApoB, whatever you look at, Lp(a), all these things you might see that Peter Attia always talks about in terms of cardiovascular risk. And it is a part of it. But look at all the other things that can lead into poor cardiovascular function that may not be mentioned regularly, like inflammation, your balance between omega-3 and omega-6, smoking. I think we're all confident in knowing that. But pathogens is one of them. So, like infections in your gut, bloodborne infections. People like, it's not something that we deal with in the UK very often, but you guys do in the States. Lyme leads into cardiovascular dysfunction. Then we got pollution, homocysteine, all these different things that all kind of play a major role in our ability to be able to maintain adequate and proper cardiac function. So, just looking at it through this really small lens of LDL or ApoB minimizes and trivializes the rest of the stuff that can actually affect your cardiovascular system. All right. And this is some of my scare tactics that I wanted to throw at you guys because we do have to take this seriously. The second we start creeping past 30, most people, not all, start to accumulate some sort of coronary calcium, or we start to get some sort of narrowing of the arteries. Now, that's in general population. I know that most people coming here are not in general population, okay? But look at the percentages there of how the vast majority of people die, right? It's quite significant. So coronary or cardiovascular disease doubles what cancer does, right? And then you get into all the other stuff like respiratory disease, diabetes, dementia, kidney, liver, all those other things. Okay. So it's very important to take into consideration. I'm only going to touch on this briefly. Now, this is, and the reason why I want to do this is because it emphasizes the point that LDL by itself is probably not the bad guy. It gets a little bit of a bad rap. And don't get me wrong, in extremely high levels of LDL, it's a problem. But if you haven't already had a cardiac event, just throwing statins at it probably won't give you a better outcome, right? So elevated LDL in somebody who hasn't already had a heart attack or has been diagnosed with peripheral arterial disease or something like that doesn't dictate their chances of having a cardiac event. If you've already had one, yes, LDL is a problem, right? But if you notice here, like we've got endothelial, so like it's the lining of all our blood vessels. So our veins, our arteries, our capillaries are all lined by endothelial. And it's one cell thick, right, to allow small things to come in and out. But LDL shouldn't be one of them. So when we have any issues like dyslipidemia, like hypertension, high blood pressure, cigarette smoking, diabetes, all these real classical things, they do damage to this endothelial lining. And that's when LDL gets in, gets trapped, gets oxidized. The immune system responds and makes these foam cells, like you see here, and starts to narrow the arteries and create calcification over time. So we need to understand that without the damage, LDL can't help create these foam cells. All right. It's a simplistic model, and Western medicine, for all its amazing things, does this regularly. It compartmentalizes problems and makes them simplistic. And unfortunately, atherosclerosis or cardiovascular disease is not simple. There's loads of things that can lead into it. So it's important to recognize that. Now, we've only got a few people here. I do understand that. For all the people here, do you guys know your blood pressure?
Yeah.
George, Fernando, do we all know it? Is it all doctor normal or is it actually good? Anybody want to throw out their blood pressure?
Well, mine used to be 130 over 82, and now with diet changes and everything else, it's usually sits around 125 over 72, somewhere in there.
Okay, good. Anybody else
What
want to
do
throw
you
pressure?
mean doctor normal, though?
That's a little bit harsh, I guess. But like a lot of doctors, especially as people age, will allow blood pressure to
Ah,
incrementally
I got
increase.
you. Okay.
So like, people will say like, my blood pressure is 130 or 135. I'm like, oh, it's okay. It's like, no, it's not. Blood pressure should remain relatively stable through our years. And one of the things that's worth noticing, and we'll touch on in a sec, like, but with blood pressure, For every 10 points that goes above 120, you're taking between 5 and 7.5 years off your life. Like, it's really significant. And it's one of those lifestyle factors that we, for the most part, unless we get like real calcification, or at least we've had, or if we've had traumatic brain injury in some circumstances, that we can control and affect really well. But also, we can track it very cheaply. A lot of the time people come in with cardiovascular risk and they're worried about all these supplements. And it's like, dude, what's your blood pressure? They're like, oh, 140 over 90. You're like, okay, it's number one. Number one before we deal with anything else. It's not sexy, but it is really important. Andrew, do you know your blood pressure? Oh, that's
I
a
should, boys. I should, but I don't.
that's terrible, Andrew. That's terrible. Okay, so it's something that's really important for everybody to know. Andrew, in fairness, you can normally I can spot high blood pressure in people. Andrew does not look like he has high blood pressure. He's way too chill. So let's have a look at so like when we're dealing with blood pressure, I didn't go through it particularly in this because it wasn't about that, but there is. Like, if you've got family members who have like high blood pressure, there is loads of stuff supplementally or lifestyle that you can do. And the easiest one, and it is crazy the effects it has, is really high dose hibiscus tea lowers blood pressure really, really quickly. It's crazy. So like it's one thing you can look at. Like, there is other stuff, like you can look at potassium plays a major role in there as well. Yeah, he is right. So you can play with potassium. CoQ10 seems to play a major role there. Some of the other stuff around like fish oil will lower blood pressure generally. And then you get into stuff, and we'll touch on that later, that increases nitric oxide. But we gotta regulate that. I'm not going to go through this in much detail, but they use this in the literature a lot where they talk about like the web of dysfunction. And I just wanted to put it in here to show it's not just a particle problem. It's not just an LDL problem that leads into cardiovascular disease. So, like, if we have mitochondrial, gastrointestinal, brain, if we have insulin dysregulation, if we have what they call inflammatory fat cells, so if we got a lot of visceral fat, if we have low testosterone, can cause issues. If we have underactive thyroid, can cause a lot of issues around cardiovascular function. So it's slightly more complex than we might consider it to be. So it needs to be looked at. Now, one of the things that you guys can always do, there is a reason why they call it the silent killer, is because symptoms don't always show as you would expect them to, right? So if you show up with COVID as an illness, I know that's an infection, it's slightly different, but you'll know relatively quickly that there's something wrong. It doesn't necessarily show a cardiovascular disease, but there is some things we can look at. I know we'll touch on erectile dysfunction in a second, but if let's come on, we might as well. Let's do it as a group. Everybody see their toes? George, you don't have to. You just keep driving. If you take your socks off, look at your toes. If you start to look as the nail comes off the cuticle, right? So the bed of your toenails, that should be pink, right? If you're starting to lose that and it's starting to turn white, we're starting to see some idea of poor circulation, right? Most of you guys will be absolutely fine, but it's worth noting. Also, capillary refill time is important in the lower limb. So if you get like that toenail, you can do it on the bottom of your toe as well, but if you push down on that toenail and you lift up, it should be white, right? As you pull up, but it should refill really quickly within 1 to 2 seconds. If you're seeing really slow refill time, it probably means you've got poor circ or the start of poor circulation. Right? If you're seeing real discoloration in your toes, it's an issue. Okay? If you're starting to lose your hair in your lower leg, it's an issue. If you're seeing thinning of the skin, definitely something that you want to consider, right? When you see thinning of the skin in particular, it normally means that it's started to travel down a very bad path in terms of circulation in the lower limbs. Now, But normally, what you would consider as one of the major first symptoms is erectile dysfunction, right? So people will often assume that this is a endocrine function, or an endocrine dysfunction, I should say. So, like, oh, I've got low testosterone, but it's normally because low testosterone and low cardiovascular system issues tend to go hand in hand. So if you're noticing erectile dysfunction, it's the first sign of poor circulation, right? So it's very important to keep that in mind before you just jump down the testosterone route. And we'll go through some of the things, the lifestyle factors that tend to play a role here. We'll talk about the stuff that increases nitric oxide a little bit later down the line. But for people who don't take sleep seriously, like I bash myself over the head having this conversation with clients all the time. They're just like, oh, is it that important? It's like, yes. And like the progression of atherosclerosis in particular is associated with this because, as it says there, it will increase autonomic nervous system function. So we'll get into fight or flight very quickly if we don't sleep adequately. You guys probably notice, like, if you don't sleep well, you're inclined to violence, isn't the right word, but to be stressed and reactive is so much higher than when you get a good night's sleep. So reflecting on sleep, especially if you don't prioritize it, some people just have sleep dysfunction, which is a little bit more complex to solve, which is fine. But if it's actually like just a not, if it's not something that you see as something that you actually need to have within your life, then you need to address that because it plays such a big role in your overall health. And you can see here with cardiovascular disease in particular, aerobically is probably the best way that you can train initially. So it's why a lot of the time when guys come in and they want to get jacked and they're like, well, why am I lifting 6 days a week and doing body part splits like Ben used to? It's like, yeah, well, your blood pressure's high and your heart rate's high and you're aerobically really unfit. We need to deal with that first because that gives you a baseline to be able to go ahead and then get jacked, right? If you're aerobically unfit, you don't recover between sets, you don't recover between training sessions. So if your coach is throwing a load of aerobic work at you, it's just to give you that baseline. Weightlifting does help. Like it improves blood sugar. And we tend to see lower visceral fat in people who lift weights, right? So it does play a role, but aerobic exercise seems to be one of the major things. This was one of the better papers I read. Like it says, the name of it was Chronic Stress is a Potential Suspect Zero for Atherosclerosis. I think that's big, right? So, like, this author seemed to indicate that our perception of stress will determine how bad this gets. And it can actually be one of the instigators for an increase in cardiovascular risk. So you can look at that in a couple of ways. Do you try and remove stress or deal with it better? Or do you become more stress resilient? And they're kind of two ends of the same spectrum, right? So, like, if you want to become more stress resilient, it's becoming more aerobically fit, it's becoming stronger, it's sleeping better, it's eating better food. All those things will allow you to deal with stress that little bit better. I know, like, back in my 20s, if I drank too much, didn't sleep, and ate crap food, my resiliency to stress was a lot lower. So if I got bad news, it would affect me an awful lot more than if all those things were in place. Right. So I'm not going to go through modalities for you to lower stress. I think a lot of us know those things, like whether that's meditation, whatever it is for you guys. But becoming more stress resilient is really important, right? Being lean means you are a little bit more stress resilient. Always super interesting literature, but loneliness is a really big predictor of cardiovascular disease. And it's a bigger predictor of death than smoking or alcohol. And it's the perception, it's not actually being alone. And it's something that I'll ask you guys, right? Why, no, probably no one will get this right, but when I remember when I read this initially, I was like, that's baffling. And then when I actually read the whole paper, it made sense. But why do you think that people who are lonely die young? Much, much younger than their counterparts who even smoke or drink regularly. No answer is wrong, but they may be.
I would probably guess that they were in a life of fight or flight through thoughts of being lonely.
Okay, probably right as well. Anybody else want to chuck an idea? No? And this, but remember, this is why we put human connection on your check-in form, because it is really important. So it's not a bizarre mechanism, but you mightn't think about it. So when we perceive loneliness, think about it ancestrally or evolutionarily. When we perceive we're part of a community, our body will prime its immune system in preparation to fight a virus because viruses will jump from person to person, right? But also our body will perceive that we have help in a certain way. So if we perceive loneliness, our body will prep itself for infection. So it also recognizes that there's no one there to help. So it'll create this low grade systemic inflammation in the immune system in preparation for like a cut or a bite, right? So there's constant low grade systemic inflammation going on throughout the body at the whole time. So levels of inflammation within perceived lonely people is much higher than it is in those who are part of a community. It's weird, but it makes sense why your body would do that. But you know what trumps loneliness? So even if you're alone, is purpose, which is weird, right? So if you're lonely with a purpose, that same thing doesn't seem to happen. Because I know that, like, we talk about it all the time. Ben talks about it all the time. Like, what's your purpose in life? And it's not just obviously to deliver on everything that you want, but it also plays a major role in health. So just an interesting point for you. Well, I found it interesting anyway. So I went through loneliness. So like if you come up and you're like doing your check-in every Friday and human connection is always really low, it is something to take into consideration. And whoever you look at that, so those who seem to be the least lonely are the ones who are involved in church generally. So those who have some sort of association to community or God, seem to be the least lonely. Now, some of the other lifestyle factors, these are the things that people tend to get bogged down in. These are a little bit the tip of the spear, right? So like we're all going to be exposed to some pollution, cleaning products. Probably not radiation, plastic products, pesticides, toxic chemicals, recreational drugs, right? So if you're smoking crack, probably not, don't want to be dealing with your diet straight away. Probably want to deal with that first. But when you look at the rest of it, we can avoid plastics. We're not going to avoid it completely, but at least not heating your food in plastic containers. At least when you go through Starbucks, you don't drink through the plastic tip when it's heated. Okay, those things actually lead to the leakage of the bad things that tend to come with plastic consumption. Pesticides, you can obviously eat organic, right? With pollution, I would always think like the two major rooms you spend your most time in, where do you work, where do you sleep? And use something like a HEPA filter can play a major role in removing from the pollutants from air in that circumstance. All right. Like when I think about myself personally, like I don't obsess about cleaning products. I think I would drive myself insane if I started looking at that kind of stuff. The stuff that you can target effectively without it becoming an obsessive issue, right? Because you're always going to get exposed to some things. You're always going to be stuck in traffic at some stage. But for you guys, and you can type this, you can shout it out. Like in terms of cardiovascular health, like what can you work on? Like if you're still smoking, right? It's obviously the big lever, right? And actually, it's funny. Like you look around the streets now, everyone vapes, right? But nobody really smokes anymore. It's bizarre. Like I remember growing up, and you just walk around, and all you'd smell going down the main street in Dublin, where I'm from, is just cigarette smoke. But you guys put in the chat. What do you think is the major thing that you can influence out of these things? Fat loss, yeah. So that's the biggest lever. Sleep, diet, and exercise. Would you put any of those in a percentage, Fernando? So is there any of those that you'd look at and go, like, that I need to work on most?
Yeah, I would say probably 50% sleep.
Cool. No, that's good. It's good to know, right? Because it's good to know the major priority.
Sorry, my connection is.
Oh, it's okay. George, toxic exposure. That's interesting. What are you exposed to?
I'm not sure if I exactly mean toxic exposure. Like you'd mentioned, all of the chemicals that we find in our house, from your bathroom to your kitchen. I don't know if that's exactly by what you mean toxic, but I know that we can go through a lot of cutting there.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like it's a real minefield when you start to go down that route. Like when you start looking around your house, you can genuinely spot the toxic or the toxins that you can find in day-to-day living. Like even if you're looking at your carpet, for example, tends to carry a lot of issues. But I always think it's the low-hanging fruit that it's best to try and target in those circumstances. Like toothpaste, for example, is relatively easy to look at. It depends what you think about fluoride. Not getting into the argument, but like if you think fluoride is going to be an issue, the removal of fluoride from your toothpaste, right? Cleaning products you can look at as well. Shampoos you can look at to a certain extent. And like if you use any beauty products like skin creams, stuff like that, you can find things that would be more, I guess, holistically made, right? And they can take a lot of those issues away. Now, I don't know if anyone here has ever done one. Always interesting to know. So, like, if you look there, like at 20, we've got 100% nitric oxide. So, this amazing molecule that vasodilates your blood vessels to allow blood flow to run through it more effectively. So, gets blood flow to your junk, which we all want. It gets it to your feet, to your hands, to your brain. It does all those really cool things. But you can see as the decades go on, we just see slow decline in nitric oxide production. Like it's significant. And that's in quote unquote like normal people. I'd like to think we all don't want to be normal. So we don't want to be 60 with only 15% of our nitric oxide available. And has anybody here or done something like it? Ever done like, because there is newer versions of this now. Has anyone here ever done a coronary calcium score?
I've done mine.
Oh yeah, Vamshi, what did you get?
Zero.
Zero. That's all you
Yeah.
want. Great. So the only score you want in this is zero. However, it's even if you're minimum mild moderate, and you've got like, so you're starting to get calcification of those arteries. Knowing your score is super important because, like I said, once you hit 30, we can start to get calcification. And they've done tests in like young men who've died in car crashes, and when they've done autopsy, they're starting to see calcium build up at really young ages now. So if you know your coronary calcium score, and you know it's a problem, it can be frightening. That's one of the issues that comes with it. But you'll start to see that you can die with it, not of it. So you can take all the considerations in place that you need to and get your lifestyle in order so that this doesn't grow. And there's actually some research out there now that there is supplementation that can be taken that actually reverses it slightly, which is insane because people have always spoken about coronary calcium reversal. And I was always like, yeah, okay, mate, step forward and accept your Nobel Prize then. But research recently has actually shown that we can reverse it slightly, but you need to know first. Now, this is what I wanted to go through briefly towards the end. Like, when we look at erectile dysfunction, Vascular is the major issue to why this is happening. So, like, your ability to be able to get blood flow throughout the body is determining whether you can get an erection, right? And then you start looking at the other things like endocrine function. So, is it a hormonal problem? Like, it could be low testosterone, it could be high estrogen, high prolactin, or these things that are affecting your ability to be able to get a hard on. And then you can look at neural issues, right? So, there can be a brain gonadal issue. Then you can look at trauma. So have you had a lot of brain injuries? Have you had kicks in the nuts at some stage in your life? Right? So there can be other reasons why this happens, but vascular is the major issue. And I know we spoke about nitric oxide, and I explained what it is. It's just this amazing vasodilator. It also is a signaling molecule. It does other really cool things, but in this context, just think of it like that. So, like, who needs it? It's like, everybody, anyone in their 40s, anyone with circulation issues, anyone with diabetes, low energy, sexual dysfunction, anyone on antacids, I put in there for a particular reason. I won't go into it in too much detail, but our ability to be able to convert nitrates to nitrites is determined by our stomach acid, right? And also mastication and chewing of vegetables. But like I said, nitrates, so like eating vegetables can be a really good way, because I know we all eat, like, we all know, like, citrulline, everyone talks about being able to, like, helping us to produce nitric oxide. But for the vast majority of us, it's not a citrulline deficiency. So as we age, it seems to be that nitrates and nitrites play a bigger role, and they come from vegetables predominantly. Now, we can supplement with them, but like the major supplements you tend to see, that is like beetroot, right? Is a really common one that's really high in nitrates. Aerobic exercise, we already touched on. Pycnogenol is a really interesting one. Pycnogenol of 40 milligrams or 150 was administered alongside L-arginine. We all know L-arginine is one of the classical ones. And then added in pycnogenol for the second one to increase the dose in the third. While only 5% of men experienced a normal erection with arginine, this number was increased to 80% with 40 milligrams of pycnogenol, right? That's huge. Like, you probably wouldn't get that with a Viagra. You wouldn't get that higher percentage. So pycnogenol is pine bark extract, right? But it's been coined, or what's the word where you I can't think about it right now. But anyway, so it was named pycnogenol, but it's extremely effective, really good antioxidant, increases nitric oxide, does loads of really cool things. It's one of the first steps I take with clientele who are suffering with erectile dysfunction, is I'll look at pycnogenol initially to help in that, to help with that. All right. Neo40 is a real classic supplement that's been around for a long time. This has nitrates in it, has hawthorn extract in it, it has beetroot extract in it, it has all these things that's been shown to increase nitric oxide really effectively. I see I've made a few spelling errors in there that are really annoying me, but you guys understand. So those supplementations, but even Neo40 pre-training can be really beneficial. So like if I give it to people, I'll normally stick it in pre-training so they can get an extra pump as well, which is beneficial, obviously, like psychologically beneficial. Like, I'm not going to touch on testosterone too much because I think we're carrying on a little bit. But obviously testosterone plays a role there, and it's interconnected with nitric oxide, right? But testosterone is more associated with the pursuit of sex more so than the actual engagement of it, because it's got that association with dopamine as well, which is more associated with pursuit. But it does play a role. And then you can think about what affects testosterone, right? Like high blood sugar, HbA1c, glycemic control, liver dysfunction, loads of other things. Okay. So who here has erectile dysfunction? Just me? All right. Anybody got any questions on that? Or anything that they want to clarify? Or it doesn't necessarily have to be about that presentation. I hope that's good food you're eating, John. I'm watching you. Anybody want to go through anything? It doesn't necessarily be have to be around the presentation. Anybody got any questions? Training, nutrition, whatever they want to go through.
I have got a couple of questions, Greg. Would too much fat in your diet cause problems with cardiovascular? That's something I kind of I get concerned about. I do kind of if I'm snacking on stuff, it'll be like nuts and Like I have a yogurt bowl in the morning with like a bunch of seeds and I have eggs. Like like I don't really always have a lot of like lean protein. It's usually like a lot based around fat. So that was something I was kind of a little bit concerned about.
Yeah, good question, right? So like there was the like, you know, everyone was worried about cholesterol for a long time, so they removed cholesterol from a lot of people's diets, like very much an 80s thing, 90s as well, fed into. Most of the research seems to indicate that when you eat a lot of cholesterol, we'll start with cholesterol. When you eat a lot of cholesterol, your endogenous or the amount that you produce inside your body drops. Now, there is hyper responders. So like when you look at the studies, it obviously takes the average, it takes these big populations, and it's like, okay, they eat all this cholesterol. Cholesterol doesn't tend to go up very much. However, when you look at like the population of it, you'll see these big outliers, and it's significant, right? So some people will respond really aggressively to eating a lot of cholesterol. It's just not very common. So most people get away with it when they eat cholesterol, their own endogenous cholesterol drops. Now, in terms of eating a higher fat diet, it all like fat is slightly different. I know protein's broken down into amino acids, and we've got different types of carbohydrates, but fats are particularly interesting because of like we've got omega-6, omega-3, omega-9, and the balance between them and how it affects physiology. Because like when we have too much omega-6, it can be a little bit inflammatory. When we have too much omega-3, it's a problem as well, right? So it's normally the balance between all of them that's most appropriate. So if you're eating enough omega-3 from fish oil, enough omega-6 from meat, and enough omega-9, which tends to come from like flaxseed and seeds and nuts and stuff like that, things tend to work out just fine.
Cool. Thanks for that.
And I know it's difficult to try and figure that out, but for the most part, if you're eating relatively healthy, it tends to be okay. Like there was the ketogenic diet that was so popular, it's still popular and is in circumstances is really effective. But when you're really lean, people do run into issues with really high fat diet, but that's like 70% of their diet from fat.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Do you have another question?
The other one was like circulation in your feet. If you get like cold feet or cold hands, is that like something to be concerned about or?
So cold hands and cold feet are a tricky one. So like people will often associate that with like low thyroid function. I tend to see it more so as a circulation issue. So yeah, it can be. So it's something to be cognizant and aware of. And it's not a tried and tested way, but if you do you ever do cold exposure?
Yeah.
Do you notice that you get pains in your hands and feet when you do cold exposure?
And a couple of weeks ago, I jumped in a lake and I was getting a little bit tingly, but I'm assuming that was just because of the shock of coming straight out of the sauna.
Maybe. So like what you tend to see in people with poor circulation is they get a really bad like pain in their hands and feet because initially they get vasoconstriction. Eventually you'll get a bit of vasodilation in the end. But as I would say, as long as you don't see like discoloration, I wouldn't be too concerned yet anyway.
Thanks.
Fernando.
Yeah, how do you get your coronary calcium score? How do you go about getting that?
Are you in the States? Yeah, the States is normally pretty. The States is normally pretty easy. You can normally get it done privately. It depends on what state you're in, because I know like John had a little bit of trouble getting it, but in a lot of the states you can just pay for it privately, and it costs somewhere between $60 and $120. The last time I checked in a couple of states, the problem is I know it changes state to state. So I'm not 100% sure, but it's normally fairly easy to pay for privately. It can be difficult to get your doctor to do it for you. So normally you just have to find somewhere privately to do it.
Yeah, unless you have like heart disease, then you probably have to go out and get it on your own.
Yeah, I mean, that was the
Okay.
same thing. So like John's my client, and John doesn't have any issues around like heart disease, but I just said like worth checking, right, for health. And so he went to his doctor. His doctor was like, nah, for the most part.
My doctor said my stents will light it up, so I'm going to do a. They're going to do a carotid artery analysis, like in 2 weeks.
Nice. Nice. So coronary calcium
Thank you.
is as a slightly older test. So it is great in the sense that it will pick up coronary calcium well. It doesn't pick it up in its really early stages, though. So there is slightly more advanced versions of it now, but I think it's a really good place to start, right? So if you're getting a zero in coronary calcium score, you're good.
Greg, I got some questions for you. Ready?
No.
First one is circling back to something you were just sharing with Des. If somebody has naturally lower blood pressure and they go into a cold plunge, are they more likely or less likely to have pain in their extremities?
Ooh, good question. I don't know with naturally low blood pressure. It's slightly different. So low blood pressure is a tricky one. Like if you're just super aerobically fit, low blood pressure is obviously very normal. So you see people with really low resting heart rates, really low blood pressure, fine. If you're not aerobically fit and you've got really low blood pressure, that'll end up being a perfusion problem. So that's the inability to hold on to sodium, right? And that can happen for a load of different reasons. People talk about, and I hate using the phrase, but like adrenal insufficiency will lead to that. So people can't hold on to sodium appropriately and they get like a lot of orthostatic hypotension. So if they stand up quickly, they get really dizzy. So like there's other things that you mentioned in there. Like in that kind of circumstance, like giving sodium can be really beneficial. Because this person doesn't create enough aldosterone naturally, so they can't hold on to their own sodium. Tends to be more of a female problem than a male, but it does happen to males as well.
If it does happen to males, what's like the cause root of that?
It's difficult to say. So adrenal insufficiency. Remember, like you've been around the fitness industry. Remember adrenal fatigue was the big thing?
Of course,
And it's still relatively big, but like the adrenals don't burn out. That's not what happens. Adrenals stop producing the hormones they should because something's blocking the pathway. And it can be loads of different things. So, like IL-6, so inflammation will do it, heavy metals will do it, lipopolysaccharides from your gut will do it. What else was it? I think that's it. So, like when most people are in that kind of circumstance with really low blood pressure, I generally think it's an inflammatory issue. You can have issues with females who are anemic because they lose, like if they're anemic because they have really heavy periods, that can be an issue because they're losing a lot of blood, right?
A lot of females that are part of my network are on like supplemental iron because of that.
Yeah, it's a real tricky one, right? I don't really like giving iron as a supplement. Because normally the problem is they never find the root cause of the anemia, which is a real issue. So like anemia can cause, like obviously with females, they don't like meat quite like men do, so they don't have the palate for it. That can be an issue, right? But is it a digestion issue? Is it a heavy period issue? Which it can be really commonly for females. So like finding the root cause, and I also prefer giving like organ meat supplements instead of iron, if I can get away with it. Now, if someone's really chronically low, then you got to give them iron, but.
Fair enough. Next question for you. And maybe it pertains to some of the guys on the call today, maybe not, but some of the more common questions that I get in a confidential setting on the front end with our team. When someone's exploring, the options to work with us are a little bit more vulnerable, I would say. So some of the questions sometimes are like around stamina, performance, premature ejaculation, like those that realm of like ED, right? And I think Western society in general is always looking for like the pill that solves the problem, So the questions that I always get are like, hey, like given that I shared this with you confidentially here, if I'm not ready to get started at Muscle Intelligence, or even if I am, what can I expect as far as like a performance stack or like a sex stack to help me like at least move the needle forward in the right direction?
Yeah, and they're like and I can't think of the supplementation off the top of my head, but I'll chuck it in the group tomorrow. But like there is stuff that you can do to delay climax. The issue that you're going to have a lot of the time is like especially guys with higher testosterone and who are leaner, like they tend to, the premature ejaculation is a bigger issue. So like guys who have slightly higher estrogen tend to be able to last longer. And I, if that's necessarily what you want, it's a tricky, it's a little bit of a conundrum basically. Now you do find in, for example, in people who are using testosterone replacement, the opposite happens. So if you really suppress estrogen and you have really high testosterone, you notice that they struggle to, they completely struggle to climax. So they can go for a long time, but they struggle to climax. Let me look into it again in terms of supplementation, but there is stuff that you can do to delay.
Okay. But otherwise, you know, for like erectile strength, we're looking at more or less nitric oxide
Vast
supplement.
majority of the problem is nitric oxide, yeah. Like I've given Neo 40 to people and they were like, wow, in certain circumstances. Now, an interesting thing that you can always ask people, and this is interesting for any of you guys who have tried Viagra, if you take Viagra and it doesn't work, your nitric oxide production is gone, which is a really significant issue. Now, there might be, okay, I'll add nuance to that. There might be some people where it's a different issue, but for the vast majority, that's going to be a nitric, that's going to be a nitric oxide problem, a really bad one.
If you don't have any of these symptoms and issues and you start playing around with nitric oxide support for the purposes of like improving your sex game, for example, are there any potential downsides that come along with that, or should you just cycle on, cycle off just to be safe?
So there's a lot of different kinds of nitric oxide. So there's what is called endothelial, which is the one that we all want, which is really cool. There's neuronal, which helps in the brain. There's also what's called inducible nitric oxide, which happens when we get a lot of inflammation. And that's not a good thing because it leaves like our vascular system and our immune system kind of slack. Now, what you do see in some people who take L-arginine and who are already really inflamed, they can get a lot of that. I've never seen it with nitrates and nitrites and like beetroot extract, for example. I've never seen it. I think you can play around with it, basically.
Awesome. Thanks, bud.
All right. Anybody else before we finish up, lads? We good? Nice, fellas. Have a lovely Wednesday evening, and I'll see you all soon.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks so
Appreciate
much.
it. Thanks, fellas.
Have a great night, boys.